You know, before we jump into our Christmas series, I think it would be appropriate in the moment and in the mood that we're in to just kind of pray together. And the reason is because I don't know all of you in this room. I know a few of you. And I really don't know what the Christmas season means for you. For some people, it's great things, and for some people, it's not so great things. And I imagine for the vast majority of us, it's some sort of mixture and the glimmer of light and the shadow of darkness. So you may be coming into this space, and for you, as you're heading into the season, like everything is good and everything is great, and you're just looking forward to the next couple of weeks. Or you may be coming into this space like the vast majority of us, and Christmas is kind of a mixed bag, right? It's complicated is the way that we would say it. And there's things that are going on inside of family and relationships, and now that we have to be in their midst, things that normally through the rest of the year can kind of just go under the surface, now they tend to rise up. And so Christmas can be, you know, a difficult time, and there's just something about the holidays that just causes there to be some friction and some tension. Or maybe you're coming into this Christmas season and somebody's missing. You know, they were here last Christmas or maybe two Christmases ago, and yet you were reminded as we just came out of Thanksgiving that there was an empty space at a table, and now there's an empty place maybe where there's no present to buy, and there was always a present to buy. I don't know where you're at, and I get that Christmas is for a lot of us just a paradox. Songs of joy and peace and happiness mixed in with just shadows and some bitterness and disappointment. So here's what I would like us to do as we're kind of kicking out the whole series, is just to take a breath. And the Bible talks a lot about the Spirit of God as being like air. And so as I pray, I just ask that we would all just collectively just breathe in the Spirit of God. So just join with me here. Loving God, we thank you for this moment right now. And I know that we all come from different places, and there are many different complicated things that kind of make up our lives. Yet here we are in this church, in this setting, in this moment, at this time. So God, we just breathe in your Spirit. I pray that you help us to bring our whole selves, our mind, our spirit, our soul, all of it to this moment. And that whatever we think about you, God, and maybe there's some of us here that we don't think about you at all, but God, whatever we think of you, I pray that in this moment that we would be present together here. And that we would just see what happens. We love you. We bless you. It's in Christ's name. Everybody say it with me. Amen. So this is Christmas, and we're thrilled that you're here, and we're beginning our Christmas series, and we're going to be looking at what it means to be light at Christmas. And as I was thinking about this, I was thinking about my childhood Christmas growing up. And I think many times, since I don't know all of you in this space, many times the best way to get to know someone is to share ridiculous stories from our childhood, right? And so I grew up in a very small traditional church just outside of Atlanta, in kind of a metro part of Atlanta, a little bit much like Next Level is, suburban, leaning towards rural, and just this very small church environment. And every season at Christmas, we would always be trying to do something new so that we, you know, we could get the community to come in and do things and all. And so we had about 85 or 100 people inside of this church. And so one of the things we did when I was a kid is we did kids' Christmas productions. How many of you grew up in church and you had kids' Christmas productions, right? Yeah. You know, how many of you got the privilege of being like a rock or something like that? It's like, yeah, you're terrible. You are now a palm tree. And so we would do all these productions, and one of the productions I remember, I was probably 9, 10 years old, And we did this play and production called Salty's Christmas Calamity. And in Salty's Christmas Calamity, one of the things about this is there is this terrifying large hymnal that is painted blue, and someone has to wear blue tights and, you know, blue arm things and with this blue face, and they become this character called Salty, which for, you know, if you're 9 or 10, it's no big deal, but if you're 3 or 4, it's quite terrifying. And actually, I have a picture of Salty. Doesn't that just speak Christmas to you? Right? And so when I was 9 or 10 years old, we had this Salty's Christmas. Right? And it was all this song and dance and everything. I still remember the words of the song. You know, we're washing Salty's pages. It's crazy how things from your childhood just stick in your head. So anyway, in this one part of the production, Salty's supposed to come down into the crowd, right? And he's supposed to interact with the little kids. We had all the little kids that had come, and they were all sitting down. So here's all these, you know, 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds, and they're all sitting. And here comes this big, scary hymnal book, which should be scary amongst itself, but it's also blue and weird. And he comes in. And this one little 3 or 4 year old boy, this was awesome, comes up as Salty is approaching him and kicks Salty in the bookmark. Salty goes down. And I'm losing it. I'm on stage. I am just laughing like crazy because this is amazing. Like, Salty is writhing in pain all on the mic. Yeah, it was a wonderful moment at Christmas. And so, you know, we tried a couple of those productions, and then, and I remember I was a little bit older. We had this idea, all the churches were doing singing Christmas trees. You ever been to a singing Christmas tree? Yeah, they're not worth, don't worry. Don't go. And so we were going to do one. So again, we're a church of like 8,500 people. So everybody's in the Christmas tree. So we're just going to invite our community. So we build this just jackabilly, hillbilly Christmas stand thing, and it was not stable at all. We put everybody up there. And people are singing that shouldn't be singing. It was just horrendous. The only saving grace in this, like, okay, so there's 85 people on this tiny little stage, and I kid you not, there is 8-10 people in the audience. That's all that we could muster up, man. And I feel bad for those 10 people. It's just horrible. So maybe you grew up in church, and maybe you got some similar story, some crazy Christmas thing that happened, you know, the live nativity scenes, that's always fun, right? You know, at churches around, they would do the live nativity scene, and they would guide people through, and like, you know, 11 months out of the year, it was a deer stand they killed deer from, and then at Christmas, there's an angel, right? And so we become familiar with all of the different characters that are in the Bible story. You know, there's the wise men, and there's all this based on basically kind of our childhood Christmas. And so what we're going to do when we go through this series, we're going to look at some different characters, and I hope to bring them into a different light, a different level of understanding, and how God used them in the midst of the story. And so today what we're going to begin with is the story of what are called the Magi, you know, or, you know, we three kings of Orient are, we call them the wise men from the East. Basically, they're magicians. That's what they were. And so in this story of these magi and these magicians, there are some things that I think that we can learn as we go into the story. So to do this, I want to take you a little further into the world that these magi would have come out of. And to do that, here's what I would like you to do. I like everybody, I just want you to close your mind, and I want to close your eyes. I want to lead you into a space. I want you to do some imagining. So everybody here, just kind of close your eyes for a second. And imagine a world where in this space, you've never seen a MacBook Pro. You have never had a Samsung Galaxy blow up on the plane seat next to you, right? You've never seen light where you walk into a dark space in the middle of the night and you flip a switch and something's just on. You've never seen the brightness of anything electronic. You've never been in a room with fluorescent lights. You've never seen a football stadium lit up on a Friday night. You've never been blinded by somebody with their brights on as a car approaches you. The brightest thing, imagine a world where the brightest thing that you have ever seen is the noonday sun. And then beyond that, once that sun goes down, that maybe there's a lamp, Maybe there's some candlelight. There could be a torch. But in reality, the brightest thing in your life is when you look up and you see the night sky. You guys, open your eyes for a second. Imagine looking up and this is your night. That the brightest thing in your life are the stars that are in the sky. And when you look up and you see bigger ones and you see groupings, and it's just always constantly there. It's not blocked out by light pollution. It's not hidden by anything. It's just the most wondrous, vivid, beautiful thing that you've ever seen. Remember the first time that I saw the night sky? I was probably 10 or 11 years old, and our church did a camping trip up into the North Georgia mountains. And before this, I'd always kind of laid in my yard. And one of the things I would love to do in the summer is I would lay down and I would lay in the grass and I would look up into the stars. And again, I grew up in Metro Atlanta, much like Metro Charlotte, plenty of light pollution. I mean, we've got street lights, everything else. And I remember looking up, and everyone always talked about how the stars were so numerous in the sky that they could not be counted. And I remember laying on my back, you know, looking up and going, I don't know what they're talking about. It's like 75. I can count them all. And then when we were 11, when I was 11, we made our way into the North Georgia mountains, and we pitched our tent in an area where there was absolutely cleared out, and there was just no trees, no street lights, nothing. And I remember coming out of my tent, you know, sometime middle of the night. It was probably 10:30, but as a kid it felt like, you know, 4. And I looked up, and for the first time in my life, this is what I saw. I was amazed. There's just something captivating about the light that is there. And so these magi that are coming into the story, this is their life. Like every night they look up and they see these stars, and they know exactly where those stars are. And they follow them. They see where they move. They know how the constellations change with the seasons. So much so that they begin to find meaning inside of this. They begin to look and say, look, this is what this is interpretive at. And it somehow becomes a job for them. That then other people come and say, help me find meaning in what I'm seeing here in the stars. Because they're captivating. They followed. They noticed every anomaly. Every shooting star, every meteor, every comet, anything that was out of place, they noticed it. They gave it their full attention. And it's almost like whatever has your attention eventually becomes how you find your way. Right? Whatever you focus in on and whatever has your attention and whatever you are channeled in on, it becomes how you find your way. And these magi, that's how they're finding their way. That I'm going to be led here. We're not a whole lot different in these days. That whatever has our attention, it really points us in our way. Which begs the question, what is it that really has your attention these days? And if I were to ask that in a different way, it would be, what is the thing that when you stop thinking about things, that you can't stop thinking about? What is the thing that in your quiet moments, in the times where you're just about to fall asleep or you're just waking up, or in those times where your mind should be still, what are the things that are still racing that you're thinking? That's a good indicator as to what has your attention. For some of us in our world, in our society, and I imagine many in this room, We hate this about ourselves, and we hate that it's true, but it is that thing that has our attention, that has captured us, is just the pursuit of money. That if I can just have the latest, greatest thing, if I can just go and get that. And so all of our thoughts are, how do we make more? How do I keep more? How do I buy more? And we hate that about ourselves, but it is true. It is what has captivated us. For others, it can be sex appeal. It can be attention. And we do everything that we can to get more of it. And so it's the thing that becomes the guiding light of our life, and we base our decisions on these things. You see, the thing that has our attention becomes the way that you find your way. So with the Magi, it's not much different. The sky has their attention. They're finding their way. And then the Bible, though, has some interesting things to say about people who use the sky and use the stars and use heavenly bodies as a way to find their way. And what I'm going to do, I want to read you a couple of passages from the Old Testament, from the scriptures that were around at the time, to talk a little bit about the thoughts of the day and how God felt about it. And then I want to set up a paradox for us. So if you got a Bible, if you don't, we're going to put the verses on screen, because there's a bit of a phenomenon that takes place. And it starts in Deuteronomy chapter 17. God is laying out the law. This is how things are supposed to operate. This is how things are supposed to work. In Deuteronomy 17, verse 2, he says, "If a man or a woman living among you in one of the towns the Lord gives you is found doing evil in the eyes of the Lord your God, in violation of his covenant, and contrary to my command," well, what are those things? Here it is. "They have worshipped other gods, bowing down to them, or to the sun, or to the moon, or to the stars in the sky. If this has been found out and been brought to your attention, then you must investigate it thoroughly. If it is true and it's been proved that this detestable thing has been done in Israel, take that man or woman who has done this evil deed to your city gate and stone that person to death." So, pretty clear there. Like, don't look at the stars. How many of you have ever had a friend or noticed someone at church or whatever that has one of those big fat study Bibles? You ever seen those? You know, it has all the stuff all around it, you know? They're like super Christian, you know? Sits on their desk at work, it's like this high. That's called a commentary Bible. I make fun. They're good. I use them. I have them. There were commentaries even on these scriptures back then. They kind of had their own little study Bibles. And one of those is called the Rabbah. And it's basically what would happen is the Jewish scholars, they would take this text and they would explain it in case you missed it. And so this is from the Deuteronomy Rabbah. And it says this. It says, "The Torah," and the Torah is the first five books of the Old Testament, right? That's what they would call the law. "The Torah is not in heaven, nor is it with those who occupy their time in studying the heavenly bodies." In other words, the law's not with you. God's not with you. If you want to look in the heavenly bodies, God is not with you. Pretty direct. Let's go on. Jeremiah 10:2 says, "Do not learn the ways of the nations or be terrified in the signs of heavens, though the nations are terrified by them." In other words, don't look to the heavens. Right? Don't do it. And then Isaiah chapter 47, I love this because God's about to get sarcastic with the people he's talking to. And it's always amazing in scripture when God starts to get lippy with people, it gets really good, right? And so this is God being very sarcastic in Isaiah 47. He says this, "Keep on then with your magic spells. Keep on with your magic spells and all your many sorceries. All the counsel you have received has only worn you out. Let your astrologers come forward, those stargazers who make predictions by mouth. Let them save you from what's coming upon you." I mean, God's being really sarcastic. "Surely they're like stubble, that the fire will burn them up." And this is the word in Scripture about people who look to the stars. This is what the Scriptures would say about those who would observe the stars and try to find their meaning in the stars. Now, with that in mind, this idea that this is what God has said, that this is what is written, I want to read to you a very familiar passage from the Christmas story. I want to put you in some tension. So Matthew chapter 2 says, "After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, magi," okay, these magicians, "from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, 'Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him.' When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Israel with and all of Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. They said, 'In Bethlehem. For this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go, search carefully for this child, and as soon as you find him, report to me so that I may go and worship him.' After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. Now let me ask you something. We just read both of those texts. In reading both of those next to each other, do you feel any tension between the two? You should. God says, this is not how you do it, yet this is how you find Jesus. This is crazy. And what I love about Matthew is he loves the tension that is being built here. You see, Matthew knows the rules. He knows you're not supposed to look at the stars. Like, no, God says you're not to do that. Especially if you do that, you go and you be stoned. Yet Matthew goes out of his way to tell us this story. See, this takes place way after Jesus is born, at least 2 years past Jesus being born. So it's not the moment. Matthew goes on to tell us about something that takes place years later, and he draws into it these characters, these people. They shouldn't be in the story. They're doing all the wrong things. Why would we bring up this story? And I love that God brings them in to the story. Because what I love about it, and I put it in your notes, this is a big idea for you to grasp. Big idea, and it applies more than Christmas. It is simply this, that God cares way more about how open your heart is than he does about whether or not you follow the rules. God cares way, way, infinitely more about how open your heart is than he does about whether or not you follow the rules. These magi, they're not following the rules. But they knew something. And they went seeking, and they went after it. And they follow this star, and they find the Son of God. They find Jesus. And the text says that they worship him. And I imagine it's a life-changing moment for them. These rule breakers, ones that have gone on the wrong path, they find Jesus while the rest of Israel is going about its day, doing their stuff, never even aware of who's in their presence and who is there. You see, guys, I think this is some good news for some of us. Because you may come into this space and you may say, well, I'm kind of in a dark place and I kind of put myself there. And maybe you found yourself in a dark place because you paid attention to the wrong thing. Maybe you followed the wrong thing and you kind of went off in a wrong direction and now you're in a dark place and you're afraid that you're never going to see light. That there's never going to be a day that there is light. Maybe you're afraid that you have ruled yourself out. That when it comes to you and God, that you are disqualified. Because I haven't followed all the rules. And maybe you find yourself in a place just like these magi where there is some light that is sitting in front of you and all you can do is go after it. And all you can do is follow it. I'm telling you, this is good news. Because no matter where you've been, light can break in for you. And you can find the Savior of the world, even if you've been going down the wrong path. There's another story in the Bible, and I'll just summarize it to you. It'd be too long to read. And it takes some place sometime after Jesus. So Jesus comes, lives his life. He dies for us. He goes into heaven. And the church just starts exploding all over the world. I mean, people are coming to Christ. They're finding this freedom. And it's just an amazing thing. And then this guy, his name is Paul, becomes what we would call the first missionary. He says, I'm going to take this message, I'm going to take it out to a group of people that really don't deserve to be heard or said or done. And so he heads to Athens, and he finds himself in Athens, Greece. And in Athens, amidst all of the smartest people on the planet, amidst all of the most sophisticated people on the planet, Paul walks into this arena, and he sees this place where there are just idols that are everywhere with names inscribed in them of all the different Greek and Roman gods all over the place. And the text says that but Paul's heart breaks, that it just, something in him breaks because he realizes they're just stuck in darkness. They're not found in freedom. They're caught up in all of this mess. And then he sees this one idol, and it says, inscribed to an unknown God. And then something in Paul says, I'm going to use this. And he does something that most of us would not do. He doesn't do what we think he would do. He doesn't come to the crowd and say, you guys have gotten it all wrong. You're all messed up. The way you've been going is absolutely crazy. We need to start over. You guys are terrible. That's not what he does. He looks at this group of people and he takes this one example. And as his heart is breaking for them in darkness, he says, guys, you're partway there. This idol that you have here to an unknown God, I want to tell you who he is. And he begins to share the message of Jesus, and light breaks in. And darkness is washed out. And a church is formed in Athens, Greece, that carries out all over that part of Asia. And light just begins to explode. You see, God is way more concerned with your openness than he is in whether or not you follow all the rules. And so you may be here and you may be stuck in this kind of place where you feel like, I don't know. I'm just always in the wrong place. I'm always doing the wrong thing. I'm always doing things that are wrong. But there's something in you. There's still something in you that is searching. There's still something in you that is yearning and reaching. And there is a God that says, I can work with that. I can build on that. I can use that. And maybe that's good news for you. Maybe there's something about your misadventures and all the screw-ups and all the mess-ups. Maybe there truly is something that God can use. Where he says, look, I'll meet you there. There's a desire in you. And you can find me in that. Now, I realize sometimes we end up in dark places by the things that we do and the path that we take, and we fall in the wrong direction. But there are many times that we find ourselves in dark places, and it's not anything that we did. We never intended to be here. It's not like we followed the wrong path. It's more like there was a candle, and we tried desperately to keep the candle lit, but there was a storm that was just blowing and blowing and blowing on our life. And as desperate as we are trying to relight the candle, it just seems like the candle is out, and I'm stuck in darkness. And it's not anything that I did. It's just the storm has blown so hard that it's dark. And so maybe you're kind of in a space like this, and it's just been that year for you. And maybe the storm that's blown your candle out this year was, you got that diagnosis. You know, life was working, life was great, and the job was good, the marriage was good, the kids were good, everything was good. And then that call came, that test result came back. And it's just like, whew. The light, where'd it go? It's darkness that's there. Or maybe you were given some bad news about your baby. It wasn't news that you wanted. It wasn't news that you expected. I know that there are people in our community here that this is the year that they finally got pregnant and they had all of the joy, and then that baby died. And it just, and you feel like all the light just got sucked out of the room. Or maybe this was the year that you lost that job. And when you first lost the job, there still was hope. And there still was like, you know, something better is going to come along, you know, and I'll get something. It'll just be a couple of weeks. Well, a couple of weeks have become a couple of months. A couple of months have become a whole season. And now you're sitting and you're wondering, like, is the light ever going to come? Am I ever going to be able to recover from this? Am I ever going to get past this? Or maybe you're kind of living in the long shadow of a relationship that dissolved. And there used to be happiness, and there used to be joy, and there used to be love. But it just seems now that all there is shades of gray and darkness. Maybe this is the year of loss. There's someone that was really important in your life, and you thought that they would always be there. There was a side of you that, no one's always there, but you're not ready to deal with that. But this was the year that now that you're having to deal with the loss. And in dealing with it, it just seems like the light has gone out. I don't know what your darkness is, but I do know that the light is coming for you. That no matter how you found your place and you found and all, I do know that the star and the light is coming for you. Recently, I had the opportunity to go spend several days up in the mountains at a friend's house. And I've become kind of a mountain person. I was more of a beach person, but I kind of really like the mountains. They're beautiful. And I was excited about this time. I was like, I'm going to go up, and it's just me and you, God, no one else around. We're going to pray. And so when I left Charlotte, it was a beautiful day here in Charlotte. It was gorgeous. You know, birds are singing, and everything looks great. And I'm excited to get to the mountains because it's the leaves are changing, and the colors are going to be there. It's just going to be just a beautiful, wondrous time. But somewhere between Charlotte and getting to the mountains, like, gray clouds settled in. And it was raining, and it wasn't that like the full bore rain. It was that like in between rain that just aggravates you with your windshield wipers because you can't get it right and timed correctly, right? And so as I'm driving up, all of these beautiful fall colors, they're just kind of muted. They're just kind of bland, and everything looks a little muddy, and it's not the experience that I wanted. And so I get up and I get there, and I'm like, well, you know, tomorrow will be a better day. And so I wake up the next day, and, I come down, and I go to stand out and look out on this beautiful mountainside, and it's worse than the day before. Like, it's gone from gray clouds to black. And it's just black. It's raining, and it's 38 degrees outside. It's not cold enough to be beautiful in snow. It's just nasty and cold and rainy. It's just a horrible day. And I'm getting really frustrated with God. I'm like, God, like, I'm here. Like, you say you love me. Make things go away because I'm the most important person in the world. You know, make something happen. And I'm frustrated. It's not the day that I want. And so I say, you know, tomorrow will be a better day. Go to bed. I wake up tomorrow. It's not a better day. It's just still cold. It's still raining. And I said, you know what, I forget it. I'm going to go in the midst of the cold. I'm going to go and I'm going to sit down on the porch. And as I was, I was thinking through and I was praying for all of my friends and all of the just crap that they've gone through this year and that they're going through, you know, in their life, job loss, pay cuts, lack of work, relationship troubles, sickness, just a lot of crap. And as I'm praying for my friends, I'm like, man, just the darkness is just on them, God, and I feel it. And in this moment while I'm praying, I look out across the hills, and in the midst of all of the blackness, all of a sudden I see the sun cut through the clouds, and there's just this ray that comes down. You've seen it, right? And as I'm sitting there, I'm watching this bright light just split the darkness wide open. And it begins to roll across the hills. And as it's approaching me and begins to wash over the porch that I'm in, the colors were amazing. I mean, like, red is red. But when you see it in this moment, there's not enough crayons in the crayon box. Just all the reds, the oranges, the yellows, was brilliant. And I felt God just speaking to me, like, Clayton, no matter how dark it is, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter what's going on in your friend's life, the light will always come. No matter how gray, no matter how black, no matter how dark your life is, there is a light that is coming for you. On the other side is beauty like you can't imagine. On the other side of the gray is amazing. Light is coming. And I don't know where you're at. I don't know what you got going on. You might be like my friends, and some of them have had a terrible year. And you may be thinking, yo, is light ever going to come for me? I'm here to tell you, yes, it is. You see, God cares more about your openness in your heart than he does about whether or not you've been keeping the rules. He cares deeply about you. And just as he used the Magi and they were way off track, he's coming for you. And there's two things that I would want to say to you if you're here and you're kind of stuck in darkness, and I'll say them rather quickly. The first one is, if the darkness is surrounding you and you're encapsulated by it, the first thing I would tell you is, don't you dare give up. Don't ever, 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 ever give up. And I know it may have been dark for a year. Maybe it's been dark for years. Don't give up. The light is coming for you. And one thing that may help you is you need to just, maybe you need to name and label the darkness. Maybe you need to look at the face and you need to say, you know what? It's depression. And I've been in this for quite a while. Or maybe it's addiction. Or maybe it's relationship trouble or self-harm. Or maybe the label is grief or loss or sadness. You need to label that, and then you need to find a group of friends and you need to say, hey, this is what's going on in my life. This is the darkness that's surrounding me. But don't ever, ever, ever give up. The light is coming. Second thing I would tell you, if you're experiencing darkness and you're caught up in all this, don't you dare exclude yourself from community. Don't withdraw. Don't take your way away from people. When we tell you that in this space there are people that are just like you, we mean there are people in this space that are just like you. And your temptation may be to say, look, looks like they all got happy, smiley faces. I want to bring my junk and bring their life down. That's not how we operate here. In one of the groups that is one of my tightest groups that we deal with, just in this last year, we have guys come in that have talked about their experience and struggles with porn, their victory over porn. We've also talked about job struggles and not having jobs. We've gone through marriage stuff. We've gone through marriage infidelity. We have gone through addiction. Because no matter what your story is, and no matter what darkness you're in, this church and this place is a safe place for your story. No one's going to look bad at you. No one's going to look down on you. And if you're caught up in darkness, the worst thing you can do is to run the other direction from people. Don't you dare give up on community. You need them. And the good news is, no matter where you're at this Christmas season, no matter what dark place you find you're in, no matter what level, it doesn't matter if you put yourself there or you just wound up there. The news, the good news of Christmas is the light is coming for you. The light is coming for you. All of that muted stuff and all of the grayness, it will go away. And all of the brilliance of your Father is waiting for you. Let's all pray together. God, I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know how hard it will get. But I do know that there is a light that is coming for us. God, we thank you for the story of this season, and we're grateful for the way that this story plays itself out, that it's not removed from darkness and it doesn't take characters and say that they can't participate because they haven't followed the rules. God, I love that this story embraces those people and that your light breaks through exactly where it needs to break through. God, I pray that you come right into the dark places, into the vulnerable places. And through this story, God, let us know that you care more about open hearts than you do about just keeping the rules. God, we're told over and over again that no matter how long our darkness has lasted or how we got here, there is a light that will break in. Give us the courage to stare the darkness in the face, to name that place. Give us the courage and the strength to take that into a community of people to say, here is what I'm struggling with. God, give us the strength to keep walking forward, believing that the light will come. And God, I beg you for light in dark places. And while we wait, keep us safe. Hold us close. And when we wake up, let us see a brilliant, bright sunrise. We love you. We thank you for this Christmas season. I'm going to pray for it in Jesus' name.